Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Daily Journey podcast. So glad that you have joined us today for my conversation with Kelly Kidwell. Kelly Kidwell, I remember distinctly the day we met, and we were throwing a block party in my neighborhood prior to the launch of our church. And Kelly, you know, if you've ever met Kelly, Kelly brings a lot of joy into every space she's in, and she is such an easy person to have a conversation with. And so I found myself in a conversation with Kelly Kidwell. She lives in my neighborhood, but I was relatively new in the neighborhood, and I'm on one edge of it. She's kind of on the other side. And so we're just chatting and talking, and I just asked her, oh, so which house do you live in? And she said, oh, that one over there. And then she said, what house do you live in? Where are you from? And I said, oh, I'm on the end of the street there. And immediately she went, oh, you're the house hunter's house. Because my family and I were on an episode of HGTV's House Hunters. And of course, all of our neighborhood had seen the episode or knew that was happening, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So she immediately identified, you're the house hunter's house. And then her eyes went big and she went, oh, you're the pastor of this church. And I said, yeah, that's me. So I remember that day we met before the church had even launched, just as it was about to. And so she's been, you know, she talks a lot about her journey with our church in this podcast too. But she, I don't know, we have a good conversation about just exploring what it means to be a person, I think, today. So I hope that's a headspace that's helpful for you today, and that listening to our conversation gives you something to think about and does some good in your soul today. So let's jump into it. Here's my conversation with Kelly Kidwell. Tell me how your kids have like engaged in this time and like what this has felt like for them.
I think initially they thought it was kind of like an early spring break.
Yeah.
I think they were excited about not having to go to school.
Sure.
And then I wasn't letting them play with anyone.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that didn't feel very good for them for a while. Until they began to understand why I wasn't letting them like play with their friends in the neighborhood when it seemed like other people were.
Yeah, I felt like it took my kids a little while, and then it was okay, right? Like yeah. At first it was like you had to go through these, they're not going to school. We're not going back to school at all. Maybe
right.
Summer school, I don't know. And then eventually they just went, okay.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think when the decision came down that school was done for the year,
mm-hmm.
That's when it really sunk in, and that's when we had a lot of tears about missing friends and missing school and their teachers and all of the things.
Which is totally fair, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And like there's something I feel like I don't know if you experience this, but it feels like we're learning better how to mourn and lament in the season because
yeah.
There's so much that's out of our control. The only thing we can do is to say, yeah, this is really hard and I can't change it. And I have to learn to live in some level of acceptance with it. Right.
Yes.
Our kids have had to learn that, you know?
Yes. And also I think that in our family, we've learned a lot about giving each other grace.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, it can be something as simple as a disagreement between brother and sister.
Sure.
Or it can be, I don't have very many Zoom calls with my classroom, and that's how I see my friends. And mm-hmm. Mom forgot about my Zoom call, you know? And so that happened last week, for example. And so I, you know, approached Sydney and said, honey, I'm so sorry. I forgot about your Zoom call today. I am so sorry. Expecting her to react strongly.
Yeah, like
maybe
upset.
Cry.
Yeah, you
know?
Yeah.
Yeah, get upset. And to have her say, oh, Mom, it's okay. I'm okay. I'll do the next one. I mean, that's something that really stands out to me is that she's learning at a young age that we do need to forgive others and, you know, extend that grace and learn how to forgive ourselves for mistakes that we make, right?
Is that like, I don't know like your parenting style in and out, right? You know, but was that moment of going, yeah. Sydney, I screwed up and I'm really sorry. Is that hard for you to do? Or is that a regular thing you do as a mom? What does that look like for you?
You know, it's something that I wish I did more often because I think it's important for our kids to see that we make mistakes and that we apologize for our mistakes, that we're not like putting ourselves on this different level where we're above it all, you know? Like, I think that helps them understand us more in a different way when we are humble enough to say, I messed up. Like, this is my fault. And I'm so sorry. Because we want them to do it, right? So we should model it for them. But I don't always, Scott. I don't always.
Well, and I mean, we're not exactly swimming in a culture right now that right. gives each other grace for making a wrong decision or just a decision we don't like, right?
Right.
Well, I'm glad at least one of us in the world is practicing the practice of asking for forgiveness and your kids are going to be better for it, I think. Well, you know, I know you were a little bit anxious about what questions do I ask around here and how do I make sure I don't like cover anybody else's thing, which for the record, I don't care. Totally fair because you're going to ask it differently and it's a different time, but I'd love to jump into what you brought to the table today.
Sure thing. And you know that I did kind of like Josie. I tried to look into what some other people had asked you.
Yeah.
But hopefully I'm coming at it from a little bit different angle.
Of course. You're your own person and we all have a perspective. So it's all good.
Yes. And actually, this question is about perspective.
Oh, okay.
So, we both have sons in sixth grade.
Yes.
And I'm finding that parenting is getting more and more tricky as Cam gets older.
Mm.
Because we want to be that strong parent that is holding them to rules and responsibilities, not to mention discipling them, right, to continue to be Jesus followers. But we also want to be friendly with them. And by that, I don't mean I want to be my kids' friends, right?
Yeah.
I mean being their trusted person that they can openly talk with and ask questions to. So obviously your experience and my experience of growing up contributes to our perspective on life, right?
Sure.
So if you could turn back time and talk to your 13-year-old self or your 18-year-old self, what would you say to him?
Okay. Wow. What a question. That's interesting. Let's see if we can zero it in. If I were to talk, so your question is, I were to go back and talk to my 13-year-old self, 18-year-old self, like knowing all the things I know about the world right now.
Right.
What would I say to him about what in particular would you say?
I guess what I'm thinking about is how he could best navigate life in terms of like, social situations, sense of self, because I think that would be something that I would talk to myself about, would be where your worth comes from kind of thing.
Yeah, I get that. Whew, Kelly Kidwell, what a question. You got to win an award for that one.
Oh, boy, sorry.
Let me babble on for a little bit and see if I land at a good answer and think out loud here. I think I wish, you know, that 13-year-old, 18-year-old self knew a lot more about like failure, trial and error, forgiveness and forgiving. Just like all in that world, I think, you know, and gosh, I don't know if it makes a difference how you're wired. I don't know if there's a 14, 15-year-old who is cool with just like, I don't know, maybe I'll screw this up.
Right.
I think we're all trying to be our best person at that time. And we're trying to figure out how to do that and what that means for me. And I can't ever say I was cognizantly aware of a fear of failure. Right.
Right.
I do think that has shaped my 20s and my 30s. Right.
Sure. It definitely.
It was a lack of, maybe it's just a lack of experiencing enough grace, like you were talking about with your, with Sydney, right? Mm-hmm. Not that my parents didn't have that conversation with me, but man, I wish I had a conversation every day where I was able to say, or someone was able to say to me, messed this up. Are we still cool? You know, I think, right. I think I wish, I would love to tell that person, when you screw something up, the relationship doesn't have to end.
Yes.
Right? Like,
yes.
When you disappoint your parents, like, they're mm-hmm. still going to be your parents and they love you. When you break up with a significant other, like, you get, like, you don't have to, like, ghost them. You can totally be in a relationship. When somebody yeah. doesn't do something the way you wanted it, you don't have to just walk away and go, I guess that's over.
Right.
I think those experiences have caused me the most self-inflicted wounds. This mm-hmm. feeling like I have to withdraw and like go, oh no, I'm not in relationship with you anymore.
Right.
You know, and that was true earlier on in my marriage. That's true with friends. You know, there's people that I don't talk to anymore that I wish, I don't know if I can ever get that back. And I wish I could. Mm-hmm. And I'm as much at, you know, like as a contributing factor in that as they were. Right. So I read a book. Gosh, what was it called? It's called Difficult Conversations. That's the name of the book. And it was a very dry, research-driven, like, report by three doctors about, like, conflict and how to, like, engage in conflict. But mm-hmm. the number one thing I took away from that was the concept of healthy conflict involves contribution conversations. Unhealthy conflict involves at-fault conversations.
Yeah.
Right? So, Kelly, you're mad at me or I'm mad at you. And what we feel like we need to do is to get clarity on who's at fault for what. Right. Mm-hmm. And that I remember in that book said, not very productive. Right.
Right.
Which, you know, like, of course not, but we do it anyway. Mm-hmm. But what it said was seek to use language of how did you contribute to the conflict we're in? And how did I contribute to that conflict?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 'Cause it takes two.
It really right? like, as much as you are not at fault in that, like your lack of speaking up or your inability to share your voice or, you know, whatever also contributed to the conflict we have here. And so, you know, gosh, I guess I wish I knew my teenage self could embrace conflict somehow.
Yes.
Like I still don't like it, but I really try to embrace it now more. And if you're going to do something or say something, I'm going to pick up the phone and call you. Kelly, if you were to send me an email tomorrow and say, Scott, I am really upset with a thing that you said in a sermon, right? Or a thing that you posted online or whatever. Mm-hmm. And here's my stance. I would feel something and I would hopefully go, I'm going to pick that up and go, so what, where are we at here? What's up? Mm-hmm. And boy, that 18-year-old me did not know how to do that.
Mm-mm. There's no way. There's no way.
I don't know if you can be taught enough at that age to do it, but that, like, we try to tell our kids that, like, it's okay to say, I messed up. It's okay to make mm-hmm. a mistake. What matters is how we work through it and talk through it. And boy, mm-hmm. I don't know if you can learn how to do that.
Right.
But I think it affects our self-worth. You use that language. It shapes our mm-hmm. identity in the decades to come. How mm-hmm. we learn to engage conflict shapes who we become, I think.
I agree with that 100%.
I don't know. Maybe you were a 16-year-old girl who was like so good at navigating conflict. Maybe that's just me.
No. To this day, Scott, I am not very good at navigating conflict. And I'm realizing that part of that is just how I'm wired. Like, in doing the Enneagram, I'm definitely on like the peacemaker end of things.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't like to make waves, but then I'm not always silent about it away from that person. Does that make sense? So like, yeah. I would say that, you know, if I were upset with someone, probably Mike would know if I was upset with
yeah,
someone.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I would vent about it, you know.
It's going to leak out in some other space, right?
It will. But like you said, through life experiences and I really think our faith comes into play, you know, because that's where the concept of grace is, giving someone else grace, knowing that they're coming from their place and we're coming from our place. I know so much more about myself within probably like the past 4 or 5 years.
And I would imagine we're bad at that, like, healthier kind of conversation because we're less aware of, like, our own, oh, here is what I'm bringing to that conflict, or maybe, yeah, I'm feeling, Kelly said this thing and boy, it made me feel some things. And I kind of know why that happened. I usually feel some things when anybody says that. So when that happens, I go, oh, this is about me now, about what Kelly said, right? But, you know, so like, how are you supposed to know that early on if no one shows you, I guess?
Right.
You know, maybe that's part of what I want to be as a parent, is to help my kids see that. It's to help my kids see, yeah, you tend to not like it when I say this. Why is that? Like, you know, yeah. I mean, that's a big question for a sixth grader right now. There's no way he's aware enough to answer it, but who knows?
Definitely. No, definitely. I know from conversations with Cameron, like, there are just a lot of connections that the coming years will help them make, right? There are just a lot of things that they're completely oblivious to, hopefully. It seems that that Kim is oblivious to some things that perhaps other boys his age know about. And I'm okay with that. I like him just the way he is. So.
Yeah, but I don't know if you've ever had a conversation with your kid of like, well, you know, your grandma or your aunt or your cousin, like, this is a thing that's true about them. And they're like, really? You know, or they're like, you know, the world is kind of like this. And they're like, no, didn't, like, again, they have no, and many of it, like, that's totally normal. An adolescence is like, I've always viewed it as you have a 3-foot circle around you. And if it's not in that circle, you're not aware of it. Right.
Yeah.
So if they bump into another kid in the hallway, they are aware. They're not thinking about how that kid is feeling anywhere else in the day.
Nope.
And many of us, like, don't have a hard time growing beyond that, I think, unless other people are helping us. Did you know that there's a person over there who felt away because you did a thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nope. I mean, how many of us sit in meetings day in and day out and are unaware of how we show up in that meeting?
Right.
And then when somebody says, you know, you're often like this in the meeting, or when you're like this, I'm like, I had no idea. And you feel terrible, but like, man, is it better if someone points it out?
Right.
Yeah.
Sometimes I don't know if it's a blessing or a curse to be more self-aware, though. I'm saying that because I had a good friend recently say to me that, and it's a friend that I consider like a spiritual sister. Like,
sure,
she's just
right, yeah. Like, you trust this person.
An amazing, yes, 100%.
Yeah.
And she said to me that she was proud of how much my self-awareness has grown in the few years that we've been friends.
Yeah.
And I've been thinking about that, like, trying to gain some perspective on where she saw that.
Mm-hmm.
And hoping that it's true. I mean,
yeah.
If it's something that is helpful.
But I often feel like the more self-aware I become, the more paranoid I am that I'm not self-aware at all. Because it's like you find out a thing about yourself and you're like, well, if that was there the whole time, am I just reading this whole thing wrong? Do I have no clue about, but that's my own, like, the compulsiveness, and like my brain is broken in that way. So, but to have, that was the other thing I would say to my 13-year-old self, man, like, go run around and enjoy it, because like, ignorance is bliss at some point, but it is
totally
better to be aware of the unique havoc you are crafting in the world in your wake, but, and trying to turn that for good instead of evil. Right.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. For sure.
Yeah. Oof, well, I'm a little scared about what your next question is going to be then, if that's how we're starting today.
Oh, boy. you just hold on tight. So I think this will be a little bit easier,
okay.
But it has a little bit of background. So I hope that you will remember this. You and I had a conversation back in the summer of 2016. So... This was literally
4 years ago.
Approximately 4 years ago. Yeah. We had met up at Bigby, and I was specifically asking you what I should do next. So, I felt like I was in this time of my life where I was being called to do something. My life has gone through a lot of change probably within the last 5 years, and a lot of the positive change that I've experienced in the past 5 years has come from attending Jamestown Harbor Church. And
so thankful time to move on and open a new chapter, and that was great. Yeah. And now we're done, right? Yeah. Yes.
The timing was definitely what it needed to be, right? Mm-hmm. But so I felt like I was being called to something, but I could not for the life of me figure out what it was. The year before, I had left a job that I'd had for 15 years.
That's right.
At a corporation. Yeah. And a job that I thought I was going to retire from in old age.
Isn't it interesting how our jobs create our identities, right? And I've been this person for 15 years. Now who am I?
Right. Yeah. Right. And so I went from being a working mom to being a stay-at-home mom. And that was a huge learning curve. Huge. Mm-hmm. So, but then, like I said, through attending Jamestown Harbor, my faith just took this huge leap forward. And I was learning and just thirsting for so much more. And I think that you saw that in me a lot because we had other conversations too.
Sure.
Yeah. But you know, here I am in this coffee shop with you, and I'm basically asking you as my pastor to tell me what to do next.
I'm and really scared of how I answered that question.
Oh no, it's good. But okay. In retrospect, like, you had known me for not even a year. And here I was putting you kind of on the spot saying, okay, spiritual leader, what do I do next?
Lead me. Yeah.
So you said to me, yes, I feel like from what you're saying to me, you are being called to do something. I don't know what it is either. But what you need to do is hold on, wait, pray, and make sure that you are listening and being aware for how God is going to speak to you. Like, what is God going to say to you in this time? But you're not going to hear it if you can't just basically calm down. You didn't use those words, but I would.
That's how you felt. Like, Kelly, calm down, and then you might hear something. Okay, good. Great
for
pastoral
real.
Advice.
No. No, I can get a little neurotic, and for someone who is primarily pretty easygoing, when I get an idea in my mind, I can be pretty driven behind that. So, but since then, I've learned so much more about being able to identify, of course, in retrospect, looking back, God's plan and God's timing. So what I'm wondering is, can you talk about a time in your life where you can see God's plan and God's timing at work? Like, not at work as your job, but like in play in your life.
Yeah, it's tough to separate my job from the rest of my life, you know, because it does, you know, intertwine in that kind of way. Interesting. Okay, so I'll talk about a story that was kind of a disaster, I guess. In a recent podcast, I was talking to somebody about this trip I took to Israel and how formational it was for me. And mostly because for the first time in my life, I thought I had a clear view on what it meant to be a disciple. Mm-hmm. Nobody had really clarified. It had never really been clarified to me in that kind of way. And how people who follow Jesus in the first century lived their lives and what that looked like and what that meant. And that was so compelling to me and life-changing to me and convicting to me to say, I'm not doing that. So how do I do that? One of the aspects of that experience was we chose, one of the aspects of a disciple at that time is they often lived in more of a communal living experience, right? Like, they certainly didn't have a suburban lifestyle, right? They had you know, like these buildings they kept adding rooms to as families grew. And like you just, you know, lived in this communal hub of anywhere from 20 to 100 kind of people. And, you know, that was a huge missing piece in my life. And I think I have pursued that in lots of different unhealthy ways. And one choice we said was, well, we want to pursue that. We actually want to live in community with people in that kind of way. And so we sold our house and moved in with people, and like actually like did it. And it didn't, I mean, it lasted 3 months. It didn't last and it wasn't healthy. And there certainly was contribution all across of it. Like I'm not a victim of that, you know, in the same way, but, in that moment we felt like, oh God, it was really like, here we go. And even though people in our, this is what I would do differently, right? Like people in our life were like, you sure about that? You know, like, but that created like, there's some scars I have from that in terms of how I relate to people. But because it, you know, whenever you get hurt by a person, like it creates your own neuroses. And I'm sure you can tell those stories too. And, you know, you have a breakup with a boyfriend and now you're afraid for a new relationship, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for that, it was like, okay, it was a false start on a journey for what community really meant to us. And it took us a long time before we realized, oh, that was important for us to learn. Like God had things to teach us in that. If we would have just calmed down and waited, we might have had a better experience, you know, and been more wise. Yeah. So I think that was one that has really shaped. Interestingly, like it didn't turn me off from that concept of people and community and being in relationship with each other. It didn't turn me off from it, but it's shaped how I approach it for better and for worse, probably. And then I think... I've told the story before too, but just like being engaged in Jamestown Harbor Church, Jamestown Harbor Church has been as transformational for me as it has been for you. Like, I'm not in this position leading it for you. I'm sitting next to you experiencing it. Mm-hmm. And that is surprising to me because I used to think of myself as a leader who needed to have it kind of all figured out. I'm kind of a smart guy. I can figure a lot of things out and I can get things done one way or the other. And I guess I was just really, God had impressed upon me really specifically, like this was a thing he was doing and I was invited into his thing. Right. Mm-hmm. It's very different than saying, what do I do now? How do I make and how do I create? And that honestly came through a lot of prayer. Like that was prayer time transformation. That was, you know, praying while I was on a run, and that was praying in the mornings and having, you know, God kind of conversations about what was happening and being patient and listening and saying, well, God, who am I in this? Like, that's a question I learned to ask in that season. Who am I in this? And he's like, you're the person who's like joining me. You're not the person who's like making it happen. And so I tried really hard and I've been trying really hard to say, well, if I can soften my responsibilities, not the right word. I don't know what the right word is. I don't know. Ownership, maybe ownership of what's happening in the ministry and in the church. It will both allow me to be my own person outside of the ministry and also be connected to people. Whereas I feel less like I'm the leader, Kelly's the follower. And I'm a friend and Kelly's a friend and we're on a journey together and we each bring something to that conversation.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yes. I know that's one thing that I really appreciate about you is that you are super authentic. And when you are sharing personal stories from the stage that relate to what we're learning, you are just so vulnerable. And I've told you after sermons, I know I've approached you and said, you wrecked me. Like, you know, when you started to get choked up, like I was gone. I was there with you.
Yeah.
that's something that I know other people really appreciate about you too. And I think you're right. You are in a leader position. You're in a leadership position.
Absolutely.
But unlike pastors throughout my growing up years, you don't put yourself in this, like, I'm at the top of the pyramid kind of thing. You absolutely hold hands with all of us as we're on this journey. And I think that that is so valuable. I think that a pastor like yourself, not being afraid to be vulnerable and not holding back from being authentic about real life and the stuff that happens, allows the rest of us to take a chance too, right? Like, you are
the thing. I don't think that's the job of the leader. I think that's the job of a person.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, of course there's a leadership principle in that, I think. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you just spoke to how that leadership principle has affected you in my leadership. Mm-hmm. Right. But I think it's more like that's the journey of a person. I think whether you're leading or not, whether you're talking about a family relationship or not, or a friend or a coworker, I think it's just always better to bring your, like, as much of your authentic self as appropriate and as you can. And that, like, allow, trust God with it as you trust people with it. And I think that's a big problem we have. We don't trust each other with ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So we build all these other layers of dysfunction in between us. And it's just, it's so maddening. And so I feel like you basically asked a transformation question to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know that was, like, what I just said to you, I've learned from trying to do that in this spot. Right. I've learned it over the last 5 years too. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I've tried to be learning it as it goes, but, so I think that the decision for me to say, yes, God, I will join you in that. And here's how I'm going to show up in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to have all the integrity in the world to say, I'm going to keep that bar up there to say, bring your full self to this thing as you mm-hmm. lead. And I've learned a lot more of myself as a person than myself as a leader in that. I appreciate the leadership side of it, of course, but I think, man, I get so passionate because I just want you to do that. I want mm-hmm. my neighbor to, I want every person to do that because I think it makes us better. I think it makes us healthier. I think that it brings us into these kinds of conversations, and it's mm-hmm. less about, well, your perspective and mine. And it's more about,
right,
I'm a person and you're a person and we all have something to experience and learn together. But
absolutely.
Yeah,
I feel so strongly about the concept of, I guess, me too, for lack of a better word. I just think that there's so much power in sharing our stories, because the person that we're sharing with could have gone through the same thing or something similar, and they've never been able to either verbalize it or separate in an occurrence from who they are. I think sometimes we let things that happen to us in life become our, like, part of who we are when we don't need to do that.
Has that been, like, your experience?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I just cannot believe the ways that I have kind of been able to step out of a lot of self-doubt that I was living in. I had just let a lot of things that happened in my younger years give me just this horrible self-image. I just was at this point where when I, and this has happened actually since I've been at Jamestown Harbor, you've shared a lot about the importance of counseling.
Sure.
And for years, I was in, like, this state of, oh, I don't need that. Like, I'm good. I'm making it through.
Sure. We call that denial, right?
Like, yes, absolute denial.
Yeah.
Absolute
I'm fine.
Denial.
Yeah.
That's another one of those God things, right? Like, in retrospect, we look back and we're like, oh yeah, hey. But when I finally got to a point where I was vulnerable enough to seek out a counselor, it turns out that, I mean, when I went to her for the first time, she could not reconcile, and she was just meeting me, she could not reconcile why I had like no value in myself. Right. Like I could
it's
not.
Like what I see and what you tell me you see don't make any sense, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Is that the first time you felt like you heard somebody kind of say that to you or yes. shine that mirror kind of thing? Yeah.
Yes. At least that strongly. I had tried counseling before and it just was not successful for one reason or another. So I really am glad that she said that because it was kind of like a wake up call for me. Mm. Like, this is exactly what I need right now. I need someone who is going to, like absolutely speak truth to me.
Yeah.
I think for years I had, surrounded myself with a lot of enablers, maybe. I don't know. Like just, I don't know.
Like voices that were taking you down the road that wasn't helpful.
For sure. For sure. And you know, one of those being that internal voice, right?
Right. Yeah, totally. So, that's the hardest one.
Yeah. So just learning about how to kind of take those negative thoughts and put a different spin on them and kind of self-talk, which at first I thought was ridiculous. Like, you know, she's telling me, you need to, when you get anxious about this situation or when you start to feel like, oh, you know, it doesn't matter because I'm not worthy of that or whatever, you need to like identify that. Like, I see you, anxiety. I see
right.
you.
Right. Yeah. There it is. I see and it. I see what it's doing.
I see it. Yeah. And you're not going to rule me anymore. Like, I'm okay. Literally. I mean, I would have to have those conversations. And the good thing is once someone teaches you how to do that, then it's in your pocket as a tool for later. Right.
Right. Yeah. Because it works. So, I mean, yeah, what you're talking about is, you know, I guess like your counselor would probably use the word like self-differentiated, right? Mm-hmm. Like the ability to observe what's happening inside of us, even while it's happening inside of us. And,
right.
That's a really, really hard thing to do. And we need somebody else to teach it to us, usually.
Yeah.
You know?
And we have to, I don't know, like I said, I just really had to be in that place where I could be vulnerable enough to actually listen to a professional tell me about myself.
So was there a moment that said, okay, I'm going to do this? Because I think that I'm probably fine voice. Like every single one of us has it. It's very normal and it can be really, mm-hmm. really strong. And unfortunately what it does is it's like the pain of getting better feels stronger than the pain of staying a little bit broken.
You know? Yeah. Right? Isn't that something?
I mean, it's a big deal. So was there a moment like, I mean, you can share what you want on this. I'm not like mm-hmm. prying or anything, but
no.
what switched for you to say, no, no more. I have to go into that pain of getting better right now.
Sure. No, I can share it. Actually, I don't think that he would mind me sharing. Pastor Ben was part of the missional community that I'm part of at the beginning. He and Fallon and their family were part of our group, and the very first time that we met, I shared during our prayer time about how I was just feeling a lot of anxiety and depression and that it was just really starting to affect my day-to-day. And I would say within a week or so, he called me and said, you know, I don't know if this is going to be useful to you. I'm not trying to pry. I'm not trying to tell you what to do. But I think that if you found the right counselor, that they could really help you. I feel like you are at that point where you can share and get help. Like I think that he identified in me something that I didn't. That I was, first of all, that I was ready. And second of all, that it was what I really needed.
He probably said, so like, thankful. Man, this is a thing I hear you talk about, you know?
Yes, he totally keyed into that.
Yeah.
So that was the first thing. But you know what? Like, we were talking about the whole concept of Me Too. He went on to say in that conversation, I have done this. I have gone to counseling.
Sure, yeah.
And it helped me with XYZ.
Yeah, yeah.
So it wasn't like he was coming to me and saying, now, Kelly, I think you need to go see a counselor. he was not like that at all. And I think that as brothers and sisters in faith, that is just the ideal, right? Like for us to come to each other with that heart and just say,
like, I've experienced this. I've learned this. Boy, I would love for you to learn this, like, or have the same experience. Yes. And I mean, it's probably one of the reasons I will talk about it, you know, and because I just can't imagine anybody doesn't. I don't know why you would never want that. Like, this person is paid just to listen to you. I mean, there are plenty of us who don't, like, and especially seasons in my own life, you know, like this one right now, it's hard to really understand what's going on inside of me. There's a lot of anxiety floating around, and like, but to have someone who can like go, well, let's get in there and figure out what's going on. I'm not sure what people are. Maybe it's like, we're afraid of admitting we're not okay. We're afraid of we're not meeting a standard, or we're a little bit broken, or we're a little bit like, boy, what a myth. If you think that you're afraid of that, you are fooling yourself to think that anybody you ever meet has got this thing called life, like, figured out. Again, it goes back to like what I hope my kids learn, what I hope I would have learned as 13 is like, dude, if you could just get your head around that right now, that we're all uniquely broken and messed up. Man, why would I even care about the gospel if I have no need for the gospel?
Right.
I believe everybody needs the gospel. And I don't believe they need it just to get into a heaven after they die. I think they need it right now because they are not the person that God would love for them to be and that they could experience. Mm-hmm. And so, like, why don't we all just start right there and go on, we're all kind of not okay. Let's just start there and then take steps forward. Yeah, if my 13-year-old, 18-year-old self could know that.
And it's okay to not be okay, right? I think that our society has just placed so much value on presenting this self that is best at everything, whether it's true or not. I think over the past few years, I have become just more confident in being my true self and hoping that will help other people. I don't know. I'm kind of a helper as well. Yeah, sure. So yeah, totally. I'm like the peacemaker and the helper. So yeah. I just want everyone to get along and everything to go for good. And I would love to tell my teenage self that it's okay not to be okay. You do not have to always be strong. And I think another thing is, it's something that I would share with teenage girls right now is, you know, knowing in a society of Instagram and these like images of perfection that, you know, God created us for more, first of all. Mm-hmm. And second of all, like, our worth does not come from what our picture looks like. Our worth comes from the love that God has for us. You know, it's not something that we can get out there and earn by putting this image out there. It's something that we have, and we need to own it.
Yeah, I think another like lens I'm hearing that through too, just because, you know, I'm sort of wired up as an achiever and succeed at things, and sort of, you know, the motivations of success, whatever that might be to a person. I had a conversation. One of the things that I've experienced in terms of the layers of success in my career, right, in terms of pastoral ministry, success looks like the bigger church, right? Success looks like the bigger platform to speak and all that kind of stuff. But what you've seen over the last, I don't know, 10 years or more is leader after leader falling from that pedestal because, you know, a lot of like sexual immorality, first and foremost, a lot of power abuse dynamic, a lot of all this kind of stuff. And I was, you know, at a conference not too long ago where a former coworker of mine had gone off to work with someone, one of these leaders who had that kind of, you know, failure of leadership experience. And he was in a room with me talking about how he watched that as, you know, next to that and what he saw and all this kind of stuff. And there was a specific incident that happened, but what he talked about is it wasn't about the incident. It was about the way that person interacted with people and the power dynamic he had again and again and again. And it just came out this particular way this time. I just remember very vividly walking away from that conversation going, no one should ever aspire to success. No one should ever aspire to, you know, that kind of achievement, because it only brings chaos. It is so rife with pain. And I think that like we have these images in our head about what we're aspiring to. You know, a teenage boy might be athletically minded. A teenage girl might be like body image conscious. You know, like a 25-year-old professional is corporate ladder oriented, right? Like a stay-at-home mom is a comparative shopping between other stay-at-home moms. And how do I mean, like, we all have a ladder, whatever it is, but man, the more we aspire to something more than we are today, the less happy we become. It's like the antithesis of contentment, right?
So, totally. Yeah. Totally. Totally agree.
What a bummer it is to live a life.
Right. I did have a third question just in case.
All right. Well, let's hear it. You can't bring it up and I'd shoot you down.
The quarantine and stay-at-home order has caused all of us to literally like stop in our tracks of the quote unquote busyness of life. I know we've had some excellent sermons about busyness and what are we doing, right? So what are some things that you've done, that you're doing or not doing during this time, that you would commit to continuing to do or not do when things go back to quote unquote normal?
Well, let me just name the logical flaw in your question. If there's anything I've learned, it's that I can't make a plan for more than 12 hours in advance at this point.
For sure.
So let me at least pull at that thread for a moment, because I'm a planner, you know, like I'm a long-term thinker and that sort of thing. And I guess the thing that I have to continue is to try to learn how to balance that a little bit better with staying in the moment. It's been exhausting to stay in this particular moment, you know, especially recently. As a leader and decision maker and things like that. But literally just before this conversation, I'm texting with someone and saying, listen, I would love to be part of that, but I cannot be in another 10-person decision-making Zoom call. Like they happen all day, every day. And I'm not, like, it's a self-care issue. I am not grounded enough to show up well in that moment. So like I haven't had time to, so I need to attend to that. I need to take some time to do that. But I think all that to say is to continue having enough flexibility as I look into the future. I felt like I was okay at it before, but I think I realized I wasn't as good at it as I thought. And boy, it's really challenging me to be flexible enough to stay present now, bring myself to the moment instead of keeping myself 6 months ahead of everybody else kind of thing. So, you know, there's a good and a bad to that, but I think that probably would be, you know, a thing I would want to continue to implement in my life and my leadership, in how I just bring myself to the room, say, all right, well, let's sit down and what are we doing today? You know, and, I often use this kind of image of gravity. Like every single one of us has different gravity. Like, we will naturally pull one way or the other in a certain thing. And I never have to, and I've given myself the permission to say, Scott, you don't have to plan for where gravity's already going to pull you. So for me, gravity's going to pull me to plan for the future. It just always is. I don't ever have to worry about, oh, I got to figure out how I'm going to plan for the future. Gravity's going to pull me there. So instead, I have to figure out how to plan to stay present in the moment, because my gravity doesn't pull me to that as much as I would like it to. So you have to answer that question too, since I gave you the third.
So I don't think that any of us would have chosen this to be our motivator to make any changes, right?
Right, of course.
Never would we do that. But since we're in it, I'd had some conversations with friends from church prior to all this happening where I was feeling very convicted about being more intentional and spending time with my kids. It just seemed like our day-to-day life was so busy that by the time we would get home, it would be dinner and then bedtime. And, you know, occasionally my kids would be like, hey, can we play a board game? And Mike and I would be like, oh, maybe tomorrow or maybe this weekend.
Sure. Well, I totally get it. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. And another gift to me of being part of Jamestown Harbor is friends that challenge me. And one of my friends said, so this is what I hear you saying. I hear you saying that you want to be more intentional in spending time with your kids. Mm. I said, yes, that's what I'm saying. And he said, well, I want you to really think about how you're going to do that. Mm. See, I'm often really good at identifying things I should do, but the how of getting there is a totally different thing. So it was really thought-provoking, and I'm thankful for people like that in my life that will say, I agree with you that this is something you should do, but how are you going to go about that? So having our life kind of stop in its tracks, it gave us lots of room for that.
Yeah.
And so that's definitely one thing that I haven't missed is that feeling of like being on the run all the time. You know, going from this to that, and our weekends just are like our Saturdays, always having something planned. And if that doesn't leave room for rest, because we had also had a lot of conversations at this time about work from rest.
Sure, yeah.
And
not rest from work, right? It works one way, not the other way.
Yes, one way. It was a concept that I was afraid of, actually, and one that I have probably learned the most from. I think that Mike and I have both incorporated a lot of things, and I've seen some positive outcomes in our family from making a commitment to have a Sabbath and what that looks like and truly resting, you know? Mm-hmm. It's been really good.
Yeah.
So I think that what I would continue when things, if they ever go back to normal, is making sure that I am present enough to see what my kids need. And if that is playing a board game, we're going to play a board game.
Yeah.
I think this whole thing has come along at a really good time because I was starting to worry about how connected I was with Cam, being a 12-year-old boy and all of the things that are going to be coming for him in life. I wanted to make sure that he would count me as an ally, you know, that he knew I was the rule maker of the house, so that he would also come to me with questions and concerns and just know that I love him very much. And we've been able to spend much more time together through this. And I think that he sees that I am present with him.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that's going to make an impression on him. That, you know, and it's not just, and here's what I would say, I would affirm in you, it's not just because something happened to your family in terms of a pandemic, right? It's
right. It's
because of a choice you made as the world happened around you.
Right.
You made a choice to say, in the middle of this, here's the choice I'm making. And I think sometimes we are framing this conversation in terms of, well, because of a pandemic, I was able to do this and that. And I'm like, you still had a choice, you know?
True.
So the lesson is about the choices we make no matter what's happening to us.
And
you made a choice to say, I'm actually becoming more aware and more present to my kids. And, and maybe that's the big learning is like, we have a choice in how we're present with each other in every bit of this, you know?
And we really do. It
matters, so. Wise words from my friend Kelly Kidwell. So thanks so much for being on today. I appreciate talking to you. Yeah.
Of course. I'm so thankful for you.
Well, I am so grateful for you. And I can't imagine not meeting you 5 years ago and
today.
So
I know. It's been wonderful.
All right. Thanks a lot.